Think you know how to party? Well, science does. In fact, there are nerds out there that spend their whole lives researching the ins and outs of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
But don't take this nerd's word for it. In the Party Science Podcast, we break down the research behind a good time and a great time.
I'm Dr. Joel Rindelob, a real-life scientific researcher.
And I'm comedian Courtney Dawson, a real-life party girl.
And together, we talk to world experts in psychedelics.
Look at topics like the physiology of squirting and show you how science parties harder than you thought possible.
Stay tuned every Wednesday for a new episode scientifically proven to rock your dome.
This is a Frank Podcast.
Welcome back to this week's Honest to Who. Today on the show, I have one of the most inspirational people that I've ever met. His name is The Movement. Otara OG in the rap game and just community game as well. I'm really hoping that you take a lot out of this like I did. I took a lot of inspiration. It got a little bit emotional and it got a little bit, you know, I learned a lot about his upbringing in Otara. And yeah, it's very, very insightful. I cannot wait for you to get there. I told you before with the reviews, and I only saw a few of you. So, you know, I learned some stuff. So thank you, everybody that's given me reviews on social media. But also thank you to everybody that's commenting in the YouTube comments and all that stuff. You're helping us get the signal boost, I should say. So, yeah, thank you. Enjoy this episode. And, yeah, man, let me know what you think. Okay, I'm very lucky. I'm so thankful for your time, King. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. I'm privileged to be here. You know? It's an honor to be here, brother, especially spending time with you, bro.
Well, that's the thing, and we talked about it before. Every time I've come and like we've kind of linked up, it's been on the radio where it's a 3-minute break, into the song, and I said I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate that because we don't actually get the full story, and I know, like I don't, I know of your story, and I know who you are, and I know the background of everything, but it's cool to just like chop it up and hear it, you know, and get it from you, you know?
Been in the industry for 20 plus years. I'm an old fart now, so being in it, very experienced. Otara, born and bred. Still repping to this day, to the wheels fall off. So, been in the music industry for quite some time. I've lived a whole lot of life, done a lot of things, seen a lot of things, even in that sense where I've seen a lot of things that I shouldn't have seen. You know what I mean? So
which we'll get to too.
Yeah.
My first question I wanted to open with was, I'm a Manurewa boy. In Manurewa, when you grow up, you know, when you're in your teens and when you're in your late teens, you know, you're kind of a segregated. I'm rewa hard. But I would always hear about Otara and I would always hear about things that happened in Otara that wouldn't happen in Manurewa. You know, like, you know, a lot of killings and gang stuff happened. What was that era of your life like from, let's say, 13 to 18 growing up in Otara?
Crazy. Because back then we only had 3 options. Now we'll probably have like 20,000 options now. The kids have it, so which is good. Back then, there was only 3 options. It was one, you either become a gang member. Second, you become a musician. And third, you become a sports player. And that's where the likes of, you know, we got greats in those fields, you know. And that was it back then. So I dipped into all 3 fields, became good at all 3. But, you know, music was the one that allowed me to travel the world, you know, travel the globe and actually, you know, see outside of Otara. Because where I'm from in Otara, there's a lot of people who don't see outside of South Auckland in general. You know, they set foot over there and that's it. They're settled. They got their bakery. They got the place where they get their fish and chips. And they're okay with that. Where, you know, myself, I've been grateful and honored to actually travel around and see outside of Otara. So a lot of people only get that sense of, you know, of growth when they leave the township. So, but it's been like that, you know, for a while, you know, but now it's a little bit different. You know, we've got a different type of beast in front of us now. You know, we've got internet now with our babies. So, you know, back then we were outside, you know, we were literally outside, you know. Active.
Yeah.
Nowadays, everyone's inside. Active online.
Now Tamariki Park isn't as busy as it used to be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, and also we've got good OGs out there, good leaders who have been through life and don't want their babies to go through. So they, you know, we've got a lot of leaders out in Otara who are assisting and playing their parts and trying to better the town. So, yeah.
Because I think, I mean, you know, like each hood, like a lot of people in South Auckland, they kind of don't understand, like, it's like the borough system and thing, you know. You have Mangere, you have Manurewa, you have Papatoi, which kind of is, you know, but Ōtara always stood on its own. You know, like Manurewa had Clendon and Weymouth, but East Tamaki is not. East Tamaki is not Ōtara. Flatbush is not Ōtara. There's just Ōtara. Like, why do you think that? I've always wondered that. Because if you go to Mangere, there's Mangere, there's Mangere Bridge. There's Mangere, there's Favona. It's still Mangere. But Ōtara is, there's something about it that's just Ōtara.
A very prideful city.
Yeah.
Very, very prideful city. But because we were unfortunate back then, we didn't have any money, so we didn't come from money or any of that. So all we had was pride. So whether someone was to offer an opportunity to us, and I'm like, and it requires money, I'll be like, you know what? I don't have that money to fund that up, but I'm gonna commit myself to you and make sure I'm loyal to you, and I'm gonna make sure you feel that. And that's all we have was a whole lot of pride, you know. It could be like 10 guys ready to beat you up. And you from Ōtara, and you'll be standing there by yourself, and you're like, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Just the fact of that, and you're going to have to beat me up. That's the way things are. We're going to die on it.
Because that's what happens.
That's what happens. Like, we literally die on it. But, yeah. You know, but that's Ōtara, you know, very small, prideful city. But, you know, again, you know, we back in the 80s, back in the 70s, everyone was like sort of like they all got to know each other.
Yeah.
You know, where you go into other suburbs, like you don't even know your neighbor. But over here, over in Ōtara, you move into the neighbors, you move into a house, and next door will pop over and give you some barbecue.
Yeah, because
just to welcome you.
That
you
know? Doesn't happen anymore.
Nah, it doesn't anymore.
Nah. And it's really like it's sad, but at the same time, I mean, with, you know, you never know how people are. You know, until you actually reach out and say, hey man, here's a I've cooked this. Would you like a feed? Would you like that?
That's right.
But, yeah, we don't have that anymore.
It's out of it. Like now, I've had this scenario happen like about 2 weeks ago. I bumped into some of the young brothers from Ōtara just to check in. I always check in and see how they're going. So, you know, they're trap guys. They're out there making the moves, moving whatever it is just to, you know, survive. And what they did is that they, you know, they moved into a home to actually start up a trap. And these fellas are young. So what they did is, you know, they moved into the street in Ōtara and they fed the whole street.
Yeah.
And told them, no, we're the new neighbors. We're here. We just want to feed everyone and let you guys know that you're okay over here. We're okay as well. Yeah. So it's one of those things. It's still going to this day in Ōtara. I think it's because of our parents who put those type of, you know, those things in us. So it's still around in Ōtara every now and then. So.
So what was school like for you? Sorry, I'm not trying to get a deep dive in here. Did you go AO? Or?
I was a very troublesome child, so I got kicked out of a lot of schools.
Yeah?
Yeah, my first year into high school, I think only lasted 10 months. Got kicked out of Tangaro College, got moved over to Orohu College, only lasted there for 9 months, got kicked out of there, went to Samoa, got sent to the islands, went to school over there, got bullied and beat up the prefect after that, got kicked out of there, Chanel College, then got sent to Malofo High School, went there, got kicked out of there, and then went to Whangaroa State High School, got kicked out of there too. And then I came back home, and Tangaro College accepted me. So I was a very troubled kid back then. I wouldn't say that. I would say misunderstood.
I was going to bring that up.
Misunderstood.
Do you think like today, and you know, these kids have so many options to channel what they have. Is there something that you had as a kid that you're like, I need to channel this somewhere, and it might be in anger, it might be here, but there's something like your creativity and from writing and doing rap, doing hip hop and music. Did you just needed a funnel somewhere?
I did, you know, and then that's where the guys came in. You know, when they came in, they allowed me to sort of discover who I am, because I was put in that environment. You know, I'm a really nice guy, you know, and I got to sort of tap into that later on, because I thought I was just a monster, and that's a lot of my brothers out there. They carry that with them. They're just monsters, and they're okay. you know, people who judged him for that, but not realizing that that's the environment that they came from. So, you know, well, in terms of music was a thing. I was a huge fan of it. So I wouldn't explain that to the guys, though. You know, they'll just check out my playlist and they're, bro, that's a dope-ass playlist. And I was like, oh, thanks, bro. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't tell them that I, you know, started writing raps. But, I, you know, I've got the likes of, you know, Mr. Sick and them around me, Face Killer and them. You know, they're all out there writing music as well. So it quite inspired me to pick up the pen and start doing what they're doing as well. So back then, yeah, it was a little bit different. So if I had the tools that we have now, I'd be undefeated now. Yeah. So, but the way we, I'm grateful that I came out from that cloth, that generation, because today it's a missing thing now in the music. So that's why the ledger hits the way it does, because I'm not caught on the streams and clicks.
Yeah. I was going to bring that up because I think I listen to your music and the first thing that I get is you're a product of your environment. Mm-hmm. And your environment was, you know, the Ōtara in the 80s, 90s, and how that was so impactful on you as a person. Mm. And you brought up the word as being a monster, right? You must see a lot of brothers and sisters out there also that moniker of being a monster is just, like you said, it's just who they are. Mm-hmm. And you were there. What was that? What was the catalyst for you to make a change for yourself? Was there one thing that made you go, maybe I need to make some changes here?
My children.
Wow.
Yeah, they're the ones, because, you know, I always said to them that I was never going to be like my father.
Wow.
But I became my father in a different way, though. Not in that way that I thought I was, you know, that I wasn't going to be like, but I ended up turning out to be him in many other aspects. But it was my children who humbled me, you know, because, you know, I never wanted, you know, I always thought, you know, what is my father doing?
Mm.
You know, he's supposed to be my protector, yet I'm terrified of this man. You know, I'm trying to avoid interacting with this man. But, you know, it was quite confusing. You know, they beat us to a pulp and they call that love. You know what I mean? So we grew up and thought that was okay. So when we try and discipline our children, like, you know, we're just actually just inheriting some of the stuff that our fathers, you know, put the into
tools.
Me.
The yeah. tools passed down.
Yeah. And then, but, you know, I picked those things up because, you know, my children are in tears. And that's the thing that hits me, where my father back then, he was quite heartless. So if anything, you've seen any of our kids and his kids in tears. It didn't budge him once. Because, you know, in the Samoan culture, the father is the head of the family. Whether you're right or wrong, it's law that you know, you just have to listen to your father and just cop it.
Yeah.
Mm.
And this day and age, you know, and learning those skills to be a better father, to be a better husband, and, you know, like they weren't around. Like it was, like back in those days, it wasn't a thing, right? Like, you know, like that's just how it is.
Mm.
I think having to kind of project and also learn and being more of a, you know, a growing mindset. Definitely. Over things, which is so powerful, brother.
Yeah, I had to really grow up in that sense to understand what was going on between my parents, because, you know, I resented them. I was so angry because I felt like my childhood was stolen from me.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I'm like, man, why did I go to gangs? You know, I could have done this and that, but it happened the way it did. But, you know, when I grew up, you know, I understood it because I became a father myself. So I started seeing some of the things that my parents struggled on as well. Then I started copying it as well. So just learning everything, just unpacking everything, trying to do better. Also tried not to beat myself up so much about it, but to sort of like make some progress and just figure out where I went wrong. Mm-hmm. And have a whole lot of ownership. That's one thing, because back then there was no ownership. There was no accountability on that end. Or, you know, when you smack your kids to a point that they're crying in the room, you know, you're supposed to go back into their room and revisit. You know, you're not supposed to smack your kids in general, but I mean, when they are in tears, you're supposed to go in there and revisit them. And what do you call it? Save the situation, fix the situation between whoever's going through what. So it's those things, you know, back then, it's that moment when you get told off by your father or your mother and you get sent to the room. That moment that you go into that room and you close that door behind you is a very, very dark place. You know what I mean? That parents need to get in real quick when that happens, because some of the kids might not come back from that, you know?
Was there a, you know, like I speak of this autopilots, and, you know, like when, you know, there's something that's happened in your life that, you know, just sends you into autopilot and you just do what you've been taught, you know what I mean? And being a father, you know, like yelling at your kids or doing something that just your brain goes into autopilot, it's just what you know. Have you had moments or times where that's happened and you've had to click yourself out of it?
Yeah, totally. It's still going to this day. Like it's never a clear run when you're doing that stuff. You don't suss it out straight away. It's one of those things that you got to be mindful of your surroundings and what's happening. Trying to be present in the moment, because that's where you sort of lose it. So, it's an ongoing thing that I try and get better on. Yeah. So I'm more mindful of it now. So
that's the word, though, mindfulness.
That's it,
right?
Mindfulness. So yeah, anything to regarding to how you're feeling as well, how the child is feeling, also how I deliver the message, because a lot of parents back in those days were actually lecturing their children to be right instead of trying to lecture them to sort of teach them.
Yeah.
It was quite hard. It was hard back then. You know, it was different because we couldn't see the love in it when they were telling us how much they, you know, were a disgusting pig or you name it, the monster, the even a human being. They're like, oh, you disgusting human being. And yeah. I'm like, oh, sheesh. All right.
There's some realness to that shit.
Yeah. And that's why the song hits the way it does, because I threw triggering words on that song. That's why everyone's like, oh, and they felt like I'm talking to them, because it's actually that.
So I want to talk, like, we've got, like, let's talk about the song. So what you're talking about is the lecture that came out a couple of weeks ago. We'll get to the lyrics first. When you sat down with that piece of paper and you're like, this is what I'm, so the gist of the song is there's a conversation between two people. One is that, it's actually what we were just talking about. Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah. It's that, that this is how the old way is, and this is how it's making me feel. Sitting down with that piece of paper and going, this is what I'm, what was the idea to spark that?
Well, me, I don't know, within my career, what stands out for me is concept writing. So a lot of my songs based on reality concepts that are in our backyard. So I try and move heavily into the Pasifika Māori stories. So these are this is a common story. So another common story was when I wrote Graduated.
Okay.
Graduated was based on, you know, the common threat getting used as getting sent to Samoa. We're going to send you back to the islands if you keep playing up. So that was a common threat. So I wrote an experience based on that, because I was a product of that as well.
Yeah.
Getting sent to the islands to learn my culture. So, it was just all those things, bro. Like it actually, you know, it was just a little bit different than how it was, you know. Just the concept writing was the only thing that sort of stood out for me. I wanted to get the listener, you know, to relate to my songs, to the stories. And that's what it was. So when I wrote that song, it was purely based on my trauma, because it's been sitting with me for all these years, but it's not as bad. But I thought, you know what, I'd try and write to this. And me, whatever's heavy on my mind, I'll write it. You know, I'll try and figure out a way where I'm going to write this piece of work and it's going to help somebody. So that was the whole motive of that song, was whether the song's based on the father's concept, the father's story, then the son's story, and then there's a solution at the end of the song. That's not what happened in my story.
I was about to say, that's not what normally does happen.
Yeah, exactly. That's not what happened in my story. So, father, son, that part happened, but at the end part, I wrote that solution for others to hopefully help them out and not go through the same pain that me and my siblings went through. So the full story was he didn't grow from the situation. So in order for that, me and my sibling went up north and got baptized into the church to forgive him. So we ended up forgiving him, even though he didn't forgive himself or even Yeah, just all those things. We just had to move on and move forward.
That's so powerful.
Bro, yeah, man. And if you know MOVE, I'm all about just trying to level up, be still as possible. So, you know, I'm always just trying to tap in. I'm like, man, it's not working. Mm. So what am I to do?
You know, like all of this, like, I mean, parking that for a bit, that healing, like, you know, trauma and then healing from trauma, like a lot of people don't. Where did you learn that from?
Therapy.
Yeah.
So I went therapy. I started seeing therapy. I still see therapy today.
Yeah.
So just to hold myself accountable, because I was still a lot of the time. So I'm at the water all the time and I'm just wondering, why is this yucky feeling in me? And I'm just writing down all these feelings. I'm jotting them all down because I would like to revisit these feelings and see what had triggered them. So I went and saw help. You know, people were telling me, like, bro, you need to see help, man. You need to go see a therapist, bro. You're, like, unwell. But that was because of my normal monsterness. I was carrying that normally, like, around like nothing.
It's just a regular.
Yeah, don't forget, I'm that monster. I'm that guy.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I'm entering worlds of youth and seeing kids a lot now. And then they're telling me how much I've inspired them. And I'm like, wow.
Wow.
So those things, I'm like, man, I got to fill my cup up all the time, because what am I used to these kids when it's half empty?
It's almost like, you know, the chlorine in the water, right? When it gets all dusty and yucky, totally, a kid will come through and say, hey, man, you really inspired me. This song has made me, you know, see life differently and to clear something.
That's it. And that's the bag for me. You know, everyone wants to collect the money bags. But for me, like, what was more important to me was the responses of others. Everyone sending me emails and telling me how much the song had touched them. To me, that's the bag. So I get those type of bags. I don't get the money bags that everyone says, but when the motive is purely based on the art and healing and helping others, the blessings fall upon me.
Because, bro, like, when it's all over, when it's said and done, man, and it's time for us to go on to another place.
That's right.
That's what we visualize, right? You know, like, that's yeah, like, I always think about this too, and it's a very morbid thing to think about, but when you pass away, like, you know, all that money, I know there's that saying, all that money don't come with you, but the impact is what you leave, right?
That's right.
That's what's left. It's not. It's got nothing to do with all my Bentley and my Ford Ranger and all this stuff.
Can't take that with you.
No, you can't compare with that, but it's that impact.
That's right.
And that comes, and that, there's a couple of moments in the last year that have made me realize, like, the impact of certain things, the way that you've done things in your life means something. Mm. And one of those moments was with Ehrman. Now, I am very, you know, like, I knew of Ehrman. I knew of his impact on Ōtara and his impact on South Auckland. But you never really understand the impact of a person until they pass away, and to see the amount of people and the amount of love and the amount of, like, just, you know, gratitude for knowing that person. And, you know, you're very close to him as well. Yeah. What is something that you've learned from him, being around him so much as well?
Oh, man, to be unapologetic.
Wow.
That guy taught us, without him, there is no me, there is no Mr. Sick, there is no everyone else face killer without Ehrman. Ehrman was the first person who came out and just said what he wanted to say, ruthlessly and unapologetically. Like, he just didn't care what anyone thought. And the fact that he'll probably, you know, rub someone the wrong way, he'll do it just to purposely do that. But I loved him because that man was my mentor. He taught us how to just be spontaneous, get out there and just kill it. Who cares what anyone else thinks? So without him, he co-signed all of us to start talking trash, you know what I mean? Start speaking that gangster rap. So that's where we all came from. So when he came out, we were all living the gangster life back then. So he was in trouble, you know, back then, and, you know, he came back to the neighborhood, and that's where he found us. And then, you know, discovered that they were MCs as well, but we were really the other guys before we became rappers. So he didn't realize we were a fan of music as well. And he's like, what? Until years later, you know, we started working with each other. He started calling me up. But Ehrman is a special person, a very, very special person. He will just pull up to your house just out of nowhere And then he pulled up to Anonymous's house, knocked on his garage, opened the sliding door, and he goes, "Who's home?" Anonymous says, "No, it's just us." And then Gangster Red walks in. He goes, "Oh, yeah, that's it." And pulls on the bro, and the bro's like, "What?" Like, he's like that. He's quite random as bro. But, you know, he taught us how to be, just stand staunch. Mm. Also, just to be proud of where we're from and who we are. So, yeah, miss the dude every day.
We were on radio when the news came, and Regan was – I've never seen Regan so distraught because, you know, there was his thing. And that made – because, you know, like, we played his music. I knew who he was, and Regan would always speak very highly of him. And when he was so like, "No, this is not right. This is not real." And, yeah, we found out. But, you know, like, to hear – you know, when we announced it, like, at New FM, the texts of just, like – like just stories. We said the next day, like, send us stories that you have, and just the amount of, oh man, just love that came through. And then, you know, like people like Dan Hooker, like I'm like, how the hell does Dan Hooker know him?
I was sitting next to him at the funeral.
But you know, and he's got the kickboxing background, right. And then he's got the rap stuff, and then he's got the Ōtara, and you're just like, wow. And you say, like, unapologetically just doesn't give a shit, just doesn't give a fuck. For somebody that didn't give a fuck, a lot of people gave a fuck about him, you know? And it was so like, wow, you know, and yeah, like I said, like, you start, the morality of life starts being like, oh, okay, maybe I've got my priorities in the wrong place. Mm. You know, maybe I'm doing things wrong. And it does take, you know, something as drastic as, you know, somebody passing away, but it shouldn't, you know? And also, you know, giving flowers where they're due.
That's right.
And, you know, that's why, I was like, man, that's why I love having this platform. I can come and give this, you know, to not just self, but other people, and give their flowers. But it's beautiful to see.
Yeah, he's definitely a legend, that guy. I miss him every day. You know, I ended up having some health issues a couple of years back, and he sort of noticed it. He called me straight away and he was like, "What's going on?" And I said, "Not well." He goes, "I heard." The man flew over from Perth and came and saw me in bed and all, you know, and he's told me, "Man, pack up, let's go home." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Let's go home."
Oh, man.
And then, you know, I mean, throughout that whole time while I was ill, he stayed with me. So, you know, he didn't have to, but he knew I was by myself, you know, and then he just came through, flew over. And that man, you know, he's done a lot for all of us, you know, coming up in the industry, giving us work, putting us on stage. So, you know, I appreciate everything that he's done for us, you know, from the streets to the stages. So that's why I carry his name everywhere I go. So ever since his passing, it was quite a hard one for me, because I was in Brisbane at the time. I was burying one of my girl cousins. I just spoke to him the night before. So he had rung me because he was asking how far one location is to another location in Brisbane. And I told him, I said, "Yeah, it's only like about half an hour. Why, what's up?" And he goes, "Nah, I'm trying to sort something out. I'll give you a call tomorrow. I'm on my way to work." And I'm like, "Cool. Well, you take it easy. I'm getting smart." And he's like, yeah, "We're good. We'll catch up tomorrow." Bro, the man goes to work, and then, things happened, and then he got sick. And that had happened. So, you know, it still sits with me, that conversation that I just had with him.
Yeah.
You
know?
But yeah.
But it's impact, eh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's somebody's, like, I think that's what it is. Like, it's got nothing to do with money. It's got nothing to do with anything like that. It's around, like, when I'm gone, like, they're going to remember me, you know? And this is what they're going to remember me for. And being unapologetically that motherfucker, like, that's a legacy, bruh. Like, fuck all that. Hey, I got 60 yachts. I got a fucking mansion, all that shit. Fuck all that. Yeah. If I can pinpoint exactly where my impact's going. And the other thing too is when my impact's going to continue.
Continue, that's right.
And he looks through all these people, through yourself, through, you know, like, you go all the way to the Young Bucks, you know, you go to your Young Sids and your Sid Diamonds, and you go to all, you know, like, and they pass on. It's a tree. It's a tree of impact. And it was really mind-blowing. I don't want to say mind-blowing. It was very amazing to be a part of seeing it, because I didn't know it firsthand, but fucking going, holy shit, like, it's And it made me think, man, I hope that I could get 1% of that. You know what I mean? So, yeah, bro, yeah. But, I mean, in terms of Ōtara and him being one of those OGs of music, who would have been his OGs? Are we talking at the OMAC? Are we talking how are we going here?
I think his OGs would have been the Americans, you know, because he was the one that opened the doors for us in Ōtara, so for rap. So, yeah, you know, he was hooked up with the Zulu Nation as well, so he was very connected with a lot of people over in the US, especially for this type of style of rapping as well. You know, for a US artist to hear it, you're like, holy heck, this guy is, you know, he
sounds like us.
Yeah, he's ready to kill somebody. So, but, you know, but he had that connection with people because he was a people's person as well. Like, he got along with a lot of people, you know, being a security guard as well, a doorman. Yeah, he's just, he was good with people. He knew his way around people. Like, as you said, you know, he was in the ring, rolling around in the carpet, you know, or, in the booth, rapping with, you know, local greats as well. So he was involved in so many ways. And that's why when he passed, everyone felt it, you know.
Did you do any work with like the OMAC Centre? In Ōtara?
The Ōtara Music and Arts Centre. Yeah. Did I work in there?
Is there any kind of was there any combination of the music side of things with their stuff, or was it quite separate?
It was quite separate because Ōtara, the Music and Arts Centre, was given to the community back in the days.
Yeah.
Well, now the council's taken over it.
Okay.
So Ōtara Music and Arts Centre was the last, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, was the last music and arts centre that was owned by the community.
Oh.
Yeah, but I heard there was, I don't know, there was some history back in the days with the head chopping, so that was part of it.
Yeah.
So that's when that was built as well, some sort of deal with the people.
Yeah.
I don't know, I wasn't around at that time.
Because,
so.
I mean, we think about being independent, right? Mm. Like, that was... It's weird because it's this place where people can go, well, back in the day, they'd go and record, but you guys are just doing it in the garage.
Mm, definitely. But that's the thing nowadays, like I run programs at their place and it's quite hard to get a slot in there to actually, you know, look after my locals, you know. So it is what it is. You know, when council takes over, it's all a business now. So there's a lot of kids that are performing and practicing in their garages at the park still, and those doors are still shut. So, you know what I mean? It's a bit funny, that one.
But isn't it cool that, like, now, like, everything's on, like, you can learn shit.
Mm.
Like, there was no learning how to make beats on, there's no YouTube. But, you know, like, you had to kind of, you know, figure it out as you went. But now, the doors are open for whoever.
A whole lot easier now.
Yeah.
I could be a beat maker tomorrow.
There's a couple of people that out there, you know, they think they are just because they see a couple of YouTube bits, but they don't have that inner, I know how to make it. It's part of me.
The him factor.
Mm. And that's what, like, I really get right now is that, like, the world is so open to knowledge. Mm. Like, there's knowledge everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. With your kids, do you see that?
Yeah, totally, totally. But, you know, I always bring old tradition or what do you call it, learnings in the play as well. So it's just holding them accountable with certain things, like asking them, like, what's your thoughts on that? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, I think that's cool as. And he's, oh, yeah. And also as well, like, I have to be mindful to learn these things about my children, not have an expectation of they will like this because I like it.
Mm.
And that's what it's been like back in the day. Nowadays, it's like, oh, all right. I'm, like, trying to search for any child of mine who has a musical bone in their body.
No, you found one? Or?
Oh, you know, but it's in different ways. It's okay. In different ways. So I've got my daughter who loves music, who's got an ear for music. My oldest boy, he thinks he's a singer, but hey, I love the confidence. So you know what I mean? So it's just those things, you know, they have some of my traits in some sort of ways, but, you know, it could come later on. So some of the things that I teach them is teach them how to record, how to make beats, have fun with it. Yeah. So just teaching them the aspect of making music is supposed to be fun.
Yeah, because I think being a father and you know being a parent, I should say, you know that pressure of you need to be like this is can kill a kid. Like literally, there's kids that have this pressure and anxiety, and instead of, you know, welcoming whatever they're into, they go, no, you, that's not who you are. And, you know, like that's why, you know, our suicide rates are so huge in Aotearoa, is because it's not just that, there's other contributing factors. But, you know, like I think now more than ever, it's so hard for kids to just be themselves. You know, there's so many avenues and there's so many different, you said it, the thing, there's 20 different ways to be now. You know, if you can be a artist, you could be a man, you could be a ballerina if you want to. But it's really like that wasn't a thing with us growing up. And maybe it's that stigma of you do what I say.
Yeah. And also the expectations. You know, that was a bad thing back then. Like our parents will expect us to be at a certain level. And but they're not realizing that, not learning the child, like, you know, you'll just put this massive thing on the kid, and the pressure that this kid's going to face, like he's going to automatically think that he's not good enough already. So, it's that back in the days. But nowadays, I think we're a bit better. Get me wrong. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're better these days. You know, we're listening more. We're more inclined with what the kids are getting up to. There's more workshops out there where they can do better or where they can catch up on schoolwork, whatever they lack in. It's those things. There's options now. We didn't have that back then. So we would have to sit with it if we were like a terrible child. We're like, oh, man, he's so disappointed in me. But imagine the child has to, what the child has to feel when he goes into their room and knowing that the parent is disappointed in them. And, you know, they don't revisit these things and sort of rekindle the relationship back then. So nowadays they do. But back then it was, that's it. You get the hard word, go to your room, and don't come back out till later.
Yeah.
Mm.
I got to learn that. I pulled that card out a couple of times. I need to sort that out on my own side of things.
I learned that because I ended up becoming a youth worker. And I sort of, you know, I had to try and be that child as well. I'm like, man. You know, and then I learned some new skills on how to engage with them and actually how to, you know, put a plaster on whatever's going on and put them back on the track again. Because sometimes once we get off track, we tend to self-sabotage everything else in the day.
Do you notice that self-sabotage? Like, I find that it's a common trait in our young people, especially in South Auckland.
It's quite ugly.
Things are going well. We've got to find a way to fuck it up somehow.
Yep. And you can do it to yourself or you can blame it on someone else. But there's no accountability there.
Nah.
So, yeah.
Maybe that's the core of the whole thing is accountability.
That's it.
I mean, in my time as a youth worker in South Auckland and at the boys' homes and stuff like that, you always, you know, this kid's on the straight and narrow. Everything's going well. We get him out to community, straight back in 2 weeks.
Back into it. Yep.
Back to being institutionalized. Have you noticed that institutionalization of young people, especially in South, has become more prevalent lately? You know, like getting into the, well, not even lately, actually, I'm going to scratch all that, has actually hurt us more than helped us. There's some kids that have been, and you know, not just in kids, like in our prison systems, in our young people, our youth prisons, I'm going to say that they come out worse off.
Yeah.
It's a very deep, vague statement.
Deep. Very, very deep. And it comes from multiple things, you know, the assistance of the government, and it's a whole lot of things, you know. Just the way of living here is getting impossible, you know, and these kids have to come out to these. So what are they left to do? You know, the stress levels they come back to a home to, it's still heightened. You know, they come there and parents are still not happy, you know, and it's always a money issue. Sometimes they're bringing up issues about money in front of their children, which they shouldn't be doing that because now you're putting all these pressures on the children. So it's a lot of things really, bro, but we just need to play our parts and just being mindful and just being aware of our babies and what we could provide for them. So yeah, it's been a bit of a system. Now we have RAM raids on an all-time high, you know. Everyone's sussing it out now. You know, they know they can't touch the kids. So they're in there and just going to keep smashing it.
Yeah.
And look at where it's at now. They're focusing on gangs.
Well, I think the approach that you take, like, because you're doing a lot of youth work over in Australia as well.
Yeah.
Can you speak on that? Like, what exactly are your roles over there in Australia?
It's a different ball game over there. So over there, the issues that we have, we're grateful because we have culture. Mm. We got culture here. So if one of our kids was playing up, we palm them off. Auntie, grandma, close family friend. You know, we don't give up. Yeah. Well, everyone over there, they just give up.
Wow.
Yeah, like, even though you got family members, like, nah, that's it. And then, you know, there's some of the parents, I deal with some of the kids where they only see their parents like for 2 hours for a fortnight. Oh. And I have to monitor them.
Oh.
I have to sit there on the same table while they're talking to each other, trying to connect. But it's over there, it's, yeah, they give up straight away. So it's a bit harder for us Kiwis as well, because a lot of the expats over there, that some of their kids are all stranded. And, you know, yeah, it's a different ball game now. It's a big ball game. There's they lack in culture over there. Well, we're grateful where we have that. So gives us some sort of stability and finding out who we are. So that's why I implement those things when I go over to Australia. I apply culture.
Mm.
And there's, I deal with a lot of kids, like kids who were born and raised in Australia, but are Tongan or Cook Island or Samoan. So I remind them of their cultural values.
Wow.
So what's your grandma like? What's she think about this? And I'm like, oh, she'll be disappointed. And he's like, all right. So when was the last time you engaged with your coach? And it'll be things like that. And they just start bringing it out. But they got the Australian accent. They've disconnected from the culture. But it's my job to reconnect them, to find out who they are and where they belong.
Yeah.
Because that's where it is, you know, the lack of identity. That's where a lot of our boys tend to join gangs because they don't know who they are.
They're trying to find identity.
Yeah, and then, you know, they're surrounded by a whole lot of broken boys.
Mm.
So, you know, they're all from different homes, but same issues, but you feel like you're seen when you're around these fellas. So, you know, that's why joining gangs was an option back then, because you just wanted to be seen and accepted.
Mm.
When at home, you'll be neglected.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that comes back to the lecture, really.
Mm.
Like, it's around that being, you know, you come home, hey, there's a real powerful line in your song around, you know, how much... you give to the church compared to what you give to me. Sorry if I'm misquoting that.
No, yeah.
And that was the line for me that I went. That's when it went from, Dan, this is good, to, whoo, I see where this is a real, come from a place of realness.
Yeah.
And you know, you've spoken on that, and it's an amazing track. And I mean, we're not here just to talk about that track, but man, if you're listening to this and you're like, what the hell are they talking about? Just stop the podcast right now. Go listen to it and then come back.
Yeah.
Any other lines in that track that you're just like, this was my, you know, you have a couple of jabs that this is my overhand right.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of them.
So if I threw that, but everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
So I said what everyone wanted to say.
You did.
So if you know me, I'm the type of guy who will say the things that people are too scared to say. And that's why we have these conversations. So I said it.
Yeah.
And I copped a little backlash from it.
Yeah.
But it's what comes with it. So, you know, not everyone sort of can understand where I'm coming from. So, but, you know, because they're not mature enough to actually take on that type of information. So when it gets to their point, they just started saying, like, you know, you're just a selfish little kid, that this and this and that. But that kid there, that guy didn't even stand up. Yeah. He'll stay seating when his father does that.
Yeah.
So when that happened, like, shout outs to Ivana, who was the actor,
so
who acted as me. When he got up, when he stands up to the father, he stood up on behalf of everyone. And he's from another generation. So when he got the script, he was like, wow. You know, like, he was just amazed at the script. So he reconnected with his father, who's from their cloth, from their generation. The father was amazed. He was like, this is our story back in the day. And he goes, this happened to me. And he was like, really? So Ivana, like, just connected with the character, man, and he just did justice. Like, he connected on the song so much on many levels. He felt every single bar, and he was like, man, he's mindful now. Now him and his relationship with his father is, you know, his father said to him on the night, he goes, man, I'm proud of you. And that's when I looked at him and said, that's what we need to hear. And he goes, man. Nah, that's it. So yeah, man. The lecture is the way it is, bro. So I'm the one that says all those things. So another triggering thing is when the father says all those words. like he says some words in the mother tongue, which is calling him a monster, you're just a beast, this and this and that. Those words I said on there triggered everyone because those are the common words that they say, you know, and also the direction of the song where it's about expenses. You're wasting my money. Mm. I've been paying this for you. I did this and that for you. I paid for your books, this and that. But that's your child. You're supposed to do that naturally, you know, yeah. with a giving heart. That's my son. I'll give you everything that I never had. But these are the things back then. They will remember these things. Like, yeah, we gave you these things. We gave you these things. But you're supposed to give that.
Yeah,
you're a parent.
See, man, you're talking to me because I say that all the time to my kids. Hey, you better eat those food. There's kids in Africa that it's kids in Africa that need a feed. Jeez, yeah, but you're so right. It's my job.
Yeah, it's your
I'm
job.
Supposed to feed you.
They're not supposed to. Yeah, yeah. Bought them here.
Yeah. You're so right. Yeah, but it's just and do you feel? And I know that you've been doing music for so long, and you know you slogged it out, and it's something like this where you had to just go, if this, fuck this, mm-hmm. I'm fucking coming, I'm coming right now for that, with the mixture of the powerful visuals from Samson Rambo, with the message, the lecture of it, for people to finally take notice of all the mahi and all, because you wouldn't have had that unless you did X, Y, Z, right?
Yes, that's correct.
You know?
And yeah, I'm grateful for it because I've been getting some flowers lately.
Boom.
Man, it's massive. You know, I've been in the industry for quite some time, man, but I never did it for those reasons. And, you know, it was cool, you know, a lot of the platforms have been acknowledging my work throughout the years. And I sort of feel like my career has been a realization, a whole realization. I've been there, I've been sitting in the back there, but a lot of people have been moving on, you know, moved on to another place or just died out with the art and craft, and I'm still there. So when everyone just fades off, people realize, oh, Move's still there.
Move's still here doing
He's
it.
He's been here the whole time.
He's been just carving and just sharpening the tools up.
That's it. And I think that's why I'm at this level now today is because experience.
Yeah.
Man, you know, back in the days, there used to be a whole lot of they're terrible answers, but because I've been interviewed quite some time, you know, quite a lot of times, you know, I've just picked up getting better and better. And, you know, within the art and craft, like a lot of people tends to put out their first project and it's their best project because they're the hungriest, right?
Mm.
It shouldn't be that case. You should get better and better and better every album, just like any other field. Right. When you go into, you're working for some company, you know, you're going to be in there 20 years. Come on, you got to come out there like great at the job at least. So it's that I see it as people are losing the drive to get better, to upskill, read more books. You know what I mean? These are the things, you know, just to better your pen game. And I've just been grateful to be acknowledged nowadays because the pen game is getting better and better. And because of my the reason why it's getting better and better is my energy.
Yeah.
It's the energy, purely what I inherit and what I put out there. So I'm careful with what I receive, what type of information I take in. So with the machine type of stuff as well, that's the type of stuff I go against. I'm like, all right. This machine is telling me that I need to release singles every week or every fortnight. Why?
Yeah.
Why do I have to listen to them? What have you done?
Yeah, give me the stats.
Yeah, what have you done, the machine? What have you done in order to keep going?
Yeah.
Like, I truly believe that.
You're so fucking right on that because you haven't had the machine and you're still going and you're still, like, you craft it out without the machine.
Without the machine.
And there's people that, they get the machine right at the start.
Right, from the start, yeah. And guess what? And they know how to look after themselves after this.
Yeah.
Because they're so used to being catered to.
Mm.
Because they've been signed to record labels, but they don't know how to do things for themselves.
And then once that machine's gone.
What am I do? What would I do? Who do I see? They don't know what to do.
Yeah. Because you're, fuck.
So I've been in that industry. I've been on that buzz since I come in.
I was going to say that. You've never had any sniff of, because you've just been like, it's not my shit.
Yeah, that's it. And if it's not for me, it's not for me. And I am not trying to do what other people are doing. Like, I'll see it. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go against that. I'm going to try to do something that's the opposite of that.
How did you know that before anything else? Because did someone spit a gem to you? Get like, hey, man, you don't need to sign that shit. Because it would, you know, like.
Oh, I've had good leaders. I have good people who have taught me through the game. Shout out to Brother D and Andy back in the day. They were the ones that taught me all about marketing and promotions when I was a young kid. Mm. But I was a street kid back then, you know. I'm like, oh. And I was really into the game. So, you know, and now I'm, you know, having issues with the boys now, you know, going through. But they're the ones that taught me these things, you know. And so, you know, well, I had good leaders back then. So I was just mindful of the game. Everyone else wanted to rap. I wanted to learn the bizzo.
I like that.
Because I felt like I was the weakest link out of my boys. Look, I got Erman, Sid, Sick, you know, Face Killer. I had greats with me. So I always put myself as the weakest link back then. I was like, I'm all right, rapper. You guys are greats. And I will push them heavily, like, out to the world and tell them that how great these guys are. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I got better and better. I just kept going. So I'm a representation of that whole lineage.
Yeah.
You know, I'm probably the last one out of that whole lineage.
Oh,
everyone's moved on. Yeah, Sick is not. Sick is there. Face moved on. Yeah.
Sid will drop little gems here and there. You think,
oh, that's my bro.
And then all of a sudden, damn, where's the next one coming out?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he's one of my faves, man.
He's good. You know, he's bringing out a lot of gems out. Yeah, you're saying.
The amount of DMs I sent that dude to try and get him on 4x80. And he's like, oh, I'll do it when I get some stuff. Okay, bro, you let me know, brother. Let me know. I would love, like, yeah. Because I came, like, when he was young Sid, I was, you know, just coming out of high school. Yep. Things were like, oh, he's hood like me. I'm from Rewa, but I'm not from Otara, but yeah, he's hood like me.
Yep.
You know, and then, so every time I, you know, link up with him or I messaged him and we talk back, you know, about this, really about the same things that we talked about, fatherhood and growing and adjusting to life. And, you know, you see that in what he's doing, you know, being a dad and being an amazing dad for his kids, you know. So it's really cool to see, man. But, man, you know, so much. I got a question, like, I wanted to ask you, because you're an OG. Do you feel that, like, Colorway Records gets as much, like, admiration as it, like, it's quite, it was so massive when it first came out. So Colorway Records, this was before Dawn Raids, before everything. I was like, wow, this is me. This is from people from my hood. Like, I was in maybe just coming out of intermediate. It was a thing. And then, yeah, I would love to know more about what the hell happened there.
Oh, crazy. Oh, that was, that was a vibe. That whole time, I think Otara was just great during that time because the cool thing about it, we had so many MCs. We had the likes of Colorway at the time, and then we had Statehouse Records.
I haven't been there for a while.
So that was us. So even though we had friendly competition, so, you know, we'll drop an album, then they'll drop an album.
Oof.
And then we'll go support each other at their release parties. And it was always that, always love, you know. But that whole time, I can tell you now, like, a lot of the music industry will probably not come close to what we got to see and do during those moments.
Yeah.
We felt like real superstars. So, you know, in Otara, you know, we were rappers, you know, trying to be big in New Zealand was later down the line. We were trying to be big in Otara. Mm. We didn't care about anybody else. Otara, we had our own music genre. And in Otara, they embraced us. So if you come to Otara, you'll hear our music everywhere. Everyone will be playing it. But, you know, out of Otara, no one will play it. But because we had our own culture, hip-hop was very a solid stronghold in Otara. That's why when you go to places. Now, people are still coming into the place just to take photos at the Facebook Killer mural. And soon we're going to have an urban mural. So it's going to turn out to be a hip-hop place. So it's one of those things.
That era.
That era was just, bro, hands down. We felt like we were superstars, massive. Like, it was like the Death Row of New Zealand back then. And that whole motion, like, just everyone's energy. We were around each other every day. And Otara was just on another buzz the whole time. So if you come to Otara, you'll notice that.
Because, I would go to the markets. And I'll go and buy me a t-shirt, and I'll go buy me a mixtape.
Yep.
And then I'll be like, whoa, and I play it in my CD player, and it's all on, you know? So a lot of people forget that.
Yeah. Nah, Colorway was a cool moment as well. So shout out to the boys. They were pretty much the first Rico boys. You know what I mean? Sheesh. Now it's quite common now. Yeah. You know, everyone getting arrested for the lyrics they say.
Oh, yes. Oh, I get you now. Yeah.
So we were the first ones back then, and Otara was the one. Yeah, that's why it's a out of its story, you know? Yeah. When they did the raids back then. So shout outs to the Colorway boys. Love my brothers.
Yeah, it was those ones. And then, like, R.E.S.
Yes.
And, you know, like, that
genre and that time was quite pure before, you know, the tsunami of, you know, your scribes and your Decepticons and Dawn Raid and, you know, all that stuff. But that was, for me, that was when I started, like, noticing hip-hop in New Zealand. And then when it, you know, the Holla Hour and all that stuff came along, they're like, oh, shit, like, okay, here it is. But that was the rumbling, I feel.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it was a good time to be a hip-hop fan.
And that's what I mean, like, for all South Aucklanders, to see brothers like that, pulling up in flash rides, popping Dom Perignon bottles, you name it. You know, it's like, oh, that's quite, you know, that's something I wouldn't mind doing, you know. Oh, what does it take to be like these guys, you know? Yeah, we'll pick up a pen or pick up a monkey wrench. Yeah. You
know what I mean? Whatever's in the boot, just grab that. Shit.
It was a moment, bro. Like, it was so good. And I can still remember it vividly to this day. And shout outs to the boys, like, it was such a moment, bro. Like, Gravity, shout out to Punchline, shout out to all the boys, Face Killer, also Vigilante the Prophet, who was Physic, the beat maker back then. But yeah, all the boys, it was such a moment back then.
But it was like that underground, right?
There was,
you know, and then you go down the line and there's, you know, like Four Corners and then there's like, you know, like Cyphonetic and Breaking Records later on. There was always this underlining thing. And I think like probably the best thing to ever come out of that, or not ever, but some of the best things was like Homebrew, you know, with Tom and all that. Like Tom, and they never aspire to be, you know, the bling bling, Day Hum or, you know, $1 million music video clip. They just wanted to make shit for their mates.
Yeah.
And it's that audience of one. And, you know, like, I'm going to make an audience for myself. I'm the only person that ever, that needs to like this shit is me, you know? Whereas opposed to it's like, okay, how can I get this commercially played? How can I get this on? Those two sides of the coin, have you noticed they're kind of converging a little bit more lately?
Yep. So I come from a generation of we weren't even considered as rap.
Whoa.
Yeah. So there's New Zealand hip hop and then there's gangster rap. So we were never included in New Zealand hip hop. So that's why I wanted to prove everyone wrong that I can rap. So that's when I started releasing my albums, because they just put us as a, you know, we were just gangsters from Ōtara. And they just thought nothing else, you know, but not realizing that, you know, we were fans of music. And, you know, that's why I always wanted to prove everyone wrong. And that's why I'm still penning the raps the way I do today, just to remind people I'm an artist. You know, yeah, I was a gangster back then, you know, because of my environment, but I ended up penning, you know, getting good at what I do. And now I'm considered as one of the artists from Ōtara. And yeah, and it's just different now, you know, but back then, and you know, the likes of Homebrew, I was around them during that time. So shout outs to Haz. The legend, bro. So
he's a troublemaker, that guy, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he could be a troublemaker, right? That's my brother, that guy.
That's my boy,
So, fun fact, Haz was the original, was the first beat maker of the Movement. So he was a Movement beat maker. Back then, you can check it out on Back to Basics, where he does his write-up. He was our beat maker at first, and also Team Dynamite. Homebrew didn't start then. So, but while we were visiting Haz, you know, there's two different types of styles of hip-hop. You got gangster rap, and then you got the likes of, you know, the central type of rap, where it's more close to boom-bapish. So, you know, and then hearing Tom Scott rap for the first time, because he was telling me, bro, I got this crazy-ass Balangi boy that's from Avondale. Check him out. And I heard him say, holy, this guy's talented, bro. And then I just kept hearing him every time I went over to do a recording session over Haz's. Now that we're getting closer and closer, because back then it was quite ruthless. When it comes to gangster rap, we were saying it straight off the bat. There's no pissing about, no wordplay. We're just going straight at you, you know. And plus, back then the cloth back then is that whatever we spoke about, we stood on it. So if I'm someone say that I'm going to rap about this, I'm going to go do it. So because we're from Ōtara, we have to live by it. This is some sort of code, the stigma that's put in our head that we have to follow through, or else our OG is going to give it to us. So it's those things. So just the scene now is getting closer and closer, but I don't think gangster rap is out anymore. It's not as bad. It's not as heavy anymore. Gangster rap's being watered down a bit. So what, gangster rap is drill rap now?
Well, that's the next thing I was going to bring up. Drill was rap? Around like the influence over in Australia, you know, with, you know, gangster rap and 1-4 and HP and all that. Have you, do you see similarities around when you guys were coming up as to
the drill stuff? Yeah, totally. But
Police.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, we came up from nothing. You know what I mean? Nothing. We didn't have internet. We didn't come from YouTube. We didn't have any of that. So our cities, in order for us to get known into other cities, we had to go city to city to perform it, whatever, however rural it was. And that's how much of an impact our music was back then. Like, we were all proud to be representing Ōtara, and our music was getting out in our township. But, bro, we influenced the next generation of gangsters from up north all the way down the line.
Yeah.
So now and then, every time when I go to a city, I see gangsters just show me so much love. Like, hey, bro. And I say, oh. And I give them the time of day. And I'm like, man, thank you for that. But I tell you this, like, that's the impact of the gangster rap scene that we had. Like, we still get it today. I still get flowers from them every day.
Wow.
And, but, you know, even though I haven't written any gangster music lately, my genre now is pretty much therapy rap.
I like that.
Because
I think a lot of people, those gangsters that, you know, give you your flowers, you know, it's great that they can see someone that's growing. You know, it's not like, it's like, yo, I had to learn a different way of doing things. And if they, you know, like you see it all the time when people are like, this is my character. This is not you're not a character. Like, this is who you are, you know, and to see growth and progress is quite, it's a shining light, really, for some people that don't know, is this going to be me for life? Like, you know, or do I need to change up?
Totally. And that's the thing. Like, because you outgrow relationships and friendships, like, it gets to the point that you might be talking to a friend that you might think you was close. But, you know, in levels of growth, like, you can't take everyone with you. Sometimes, you know, it's a phase. You know, sometimes things that you think are forever has its end date. And then you're going to have to let go of certain things. And, you know, letting go is one of the hardest things to do. So it's just those things. You outgrow certain relationships, but a lot of people see it in the sense of, you're too good for me. So I don't do that. I keep revisiting certain things. I just talk about different things now. You know, and I remind them that my mind state's in a different place now. So the things that you get excited about, it's no longer exciting for me. And I'll make that, I'll let it be known too, you know, because I still appreciate the friendships. I just try and figure out a new way we can be friends on a new level.
Yeah, and in a different format.
Different format.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it doesn't have to end.
Yeah.
But sometimes other people who are, you know, not mature enough to take that information, and it's too much for them. You know, they think, oh, this guy thinks he's too good for me. But, you know, this is someone who's done the work.
And I mean, your track record is out there for people to see. You know what I mean? They see, you know, this is what I was like when I made this album, when I made this album, this is what I was like. And you can see the progression. And then where you are now with the Lecture, and, you know, they came out, and you see the formation of what you are. And it's cool to watch. It's like watching, you know, like a TV series and like a Breaking Bad. And it starts off with this guy that's just down on his luck, and he just grows into this, you know, this monster. But then, you know, like, it's the other way around.
So, brother, I
loved my time with you, bro. Thank you so much for you. Thank you for your energy and your vibe and your gems. And just thank you for being you, my bro.
Nah, I appreciate you, man. Honestly, this platform is huge, man. I'm grateful and honored to be here, brother. Like, especially being here now, because I'm going to be heading back to Australia soon, and I'm grateful to get it in before it gets busy and famous, bro. Because it is famous, but it's going to get busy, and everyone's going to try and get on. But I can at least say I got in there.
You stop right there. That's why the bees stung you, bro. He was like, "Nah, you're not coming on there, bro. We've got it done." Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
And we'll get you back on Wednesday as well.
Frank Podcast.
Hello, we're Ellie, Chris, and Guy from the Extremely Casual Gamers Podcast. We're a casual gaming podcast for the everyday gamer.
We chat everything gaming, from PlayStation to Xbox to Nintendo to PC, but not like full-on stuff, like super chill stuff, casual stuff, like, oh, if you had to date a video game character, who would you date?
Even if you're just gaming on your mobile, we want to hang out with you, and we've got awesome giveaways for you to win.
Join us every Thursday for a brand new episode. Just search Extremely Casual Gamers wherever you get your podcasts.